Hey, Mac, when does deer season start?
Well, if you want the best deer herd possible, Lanny, you need to start right now.
Right now.
That's why we're starting our promotion. I mean, we've got a Deer Season Starts Now promotion on plantbiologic.com where you can pick up our Game Changer soybeans, our forage soybeans, and our spring protein peas. While you're there, you might as well go ahead and pick up some brassicas like our final forage and winter bowls.
Yeah, stock up for the cool season planting right now. Listeners to the GK Podcast, if you use coupon code GKPOD, you can save an additional 10% off our entire selection of warm season, cool season, and clover food plot seed. Get started today and visit plantbiologic.com for an unforgettable fall.
I am Jeff Foxworthy, and welcome to Gamekeeper Podcast. If you want to learn more about farming for wildlife and habitat management, then buddy, you are in the right place. Join the Gamekeeper crew direct from Mossy Oak Land Enhancement Studio as they discuss the latest wildlife and habitat management practices, news, and of course, hunting. There's no telling what you'll learn, but I'm going to tell you, I bet it's interesting. Enjoy.
We're live in 3, 2, 1.
Okay, everybody. Turkey season's almost here.
It's here.
It's kids are going, aren't they?
Don't even talk about it.
Yeah.
Don't even talk about it. 3 days. 2 days away.
It was a beautiful morning.
Did they gobble? Can you send an Onyx pen this morning?
I have disabled my Onyx. I'm scared you're going to start spamming off
tracking.
Yes.
That's what they're
he's let the game notorious begin. Especially this time of year.
Yes.
Well, Dudley, you look like you're excited.
Yeah, really looking forward to Friday morning.
You got a new mouth call that you can run. I heard you.
But you know, I take the inaugural or annual photo of the front of the office every year and post it to Instagram. But you know, I've been having to get somebody else to take the photo.
Yeah.
Well, maybe I can do this year. I don't think I've got a place to go Friday.
So. Okay.
Maybe
your truck will be in the parking lot.
Woe is me.
You knew that was coming, Tom.
Yeah. Well, okay, Richie.
What is that?
That's Richie.
Mark that time code.
Yeah, for real.
So when we look across the room, we've got two guys, two derelicts.
Two dudes.
Yeah, two dudes. Starting out rough.
I know.
Careful about it. Don't pick on my buddy now.
Yeah. So we've got Dan, the man Moultrie.
In the house.
And right next to him, we've got Derek Duke, who we're going to introduce him to everybody, but he's kind of an interesting guy himself.
Mm-hmm. That's a good adjective for me. I like that. I like interesting. Interesting.
Yeah, that could go either way.
So, did you really play football?
For a little while, yes, sir. Played rugby after that. I played a lot more rugby than I did football.
Mm. Kind of look like a football player.
Is that good?
Well, I mean, he's big as Lanny.
Rugby takes tough.
I'm not that big. I'm just
rugby takes tough to a whole different level, though.
Oh, Bobby, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would be backing down on all the picking on him right now, knowing he was in rugby.
That's kind of what I was thinking.
Mm-hmm.
He's maybe y'all's first University of Alabama football player you've allowed at the desk.
For sure.
I'm here with a big Auburn donor right 100%.
Here. 100%.
Knowingly.
No, that's right. Good, that's a good point. So y'all are kind of balancing each other out here. We got Auburn and Alabama there, and then we got Mississippi State.
Dan did not play football at Auburn.
No.
And neither did Bobby.
No, I didn't. But that doesn't mean. Well, let's move off of football.
We hunted while we were at Auburn and got a little school.
That's right.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That sounds like what I did at State.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so the Moultrie-Mossy Oak relationship, the Dan, the Toxie relationship.
You had to go there.
Goes back a long way.
You had to talk about how old we are. That's great, buddy.
It's historic.
Yeah. It is. Well, Dan said the last time he came over here, he used a map instead of a GPS.
Of a map system.
That's been a while.
He rode his bike.
That was last week. His phone was dead.
So, Dan, last night you mentioned something that kind of caught my attention.
Careful, Bobby. Don't get dig too deep.
And then today we had a video sent in about an eagle swooping down and attacking a hen. You said you had a friend that had witnessed an eagle attack.
I had a friend that was hunting in Missouri, and he told me the guide and – whether you're fans of people that fan or not fans of people that fan, but he was in Missouri and the guide had a fan and there was an eagle coming over and he said, "You ever seen these eagles come down on a turkey?" And he goes, "Never seen it." He said, "Watch this." He fans him. Here comes the eagle. And I said, "Really and truly?" He said, "He'd let him go away and do it and bring him back." And he said, "It was the most amazing thing." So that, yep. heightened my curiosity. I wonder how many of the eagles are poaching on the turkeys or taking them.
No doubt it's
got to be happening.
Oh, yeah,
but that's the first qualified mm-hmm. for sure that it happened. Not tailgate talk. It was the first time that would have been verified with me that had happened.
I've seen them down the place we used to have south of here swoop down and then run the turkeys off. They were trying, but the turkeys got to the woods right. before yep. he got to town.
I've actually got video. It was a big, huge golden eagle. Mm-hmm. But I have a video from like 2 years ago where you see it was a Moultrie camera catching, mm-hmm. you know, whatever, 10 seconds of video type of thing. And there was all these hens and some jakes. I didn't see a longbeard in it. And then just maybe 10 minutes later, and then all around you can hear, and he had just swooped in and tried to catch one. Yeah. And he sits there for almost the whole video. You know, it's just a short piece that mm-hmm. records. And then right as it ends, before it ends, he flies off. It's like someone was there filming it almost. Mm. It was so precise. But we've known him. We listened to Dr. Chamberlain. Right. It's not just eagles.
No, it's all birds.
The horned owl, yes. I think, is yeah. really bad about it. They have a lot of. Even a mature turkey has predators. Mm-hmm.
It's tough being a turkey.
Just not many.
Well, we're also seeing a greater prevalence of eagles.
Oh,
no
doubt.
You know, I went on a duck hunt around Stuttgart, and they were saying it was a cypress lake, an old mm-hmm. irrigation lake, shallow irrigation lake. They said they counted 33 bald eagles on it the yep. afternoon before.
Oh, the population.
And, you know, and 5 years ago, you may have seen one.
Well, they did a restoration.
Two, just a pair.
Efforts with them up and down the waterway. Oh, yeah.
That's a great story of yeah. conservation, actually, but they've restored them into great numbers. I'm not a U.S. Fish and Wildlife biologist, but I can tell you from my own sightings on our own places, there are everywhere. We were riding around and looking at uh-huh. actually duck habitat stuff with Dan yesterday afternoon, and he's like, he was spotting everything, but he's like, isn't that a bald eagle? And Bobby's like, yeah, that's a sure big, enough. Huge, gigantic bald eagle just hovering around looking for a duck to catch on land.
Yeah.
And I do think we talked about this regressing a little bit from today's topic, but I'm convinced that that's also why a lot of the best duck hunting today is in and around avian, cover avian and not out predation. In the wide open.
Yeah. Yeah,
for one, sense. They've proven, and even biologists have proven, that ducks very quickly learn to detect what a duck blind looks like and avoid mm-hmm. it. And so it's almost impossible in the wide open water anymore. Hmm. But they don't like being out on open, especially big ducks and mallards, don't like being out on that open water for long, and they're going to eat and get back in the timber and the cover and stuff. And eagles, hawks, and all that, a big reason for it. So
Toxie had the best comment on pressure. I think it was Toxie. I don't think it was you, Bobby, but
nah.
about pressure. And again, we're getting, there's so many duck hunters now, and the pressure on all game makes a significant difference. But didn't you say pressure makes water run uphill?
Yeah, pressure makes water run uphill.
That's a great comment.
The whole world, and I mean, this is getting out there, but it's true. The whole world, the whole universe, for that matter, everything we live in is going to continually adapt and do. Like Dudley can tell you what will happen to plant species and trees over yeah. time by certain conditions and what happens to them. Well, so does wildlife. And so pressure, you know, there's a yin and a yang. So pressure means reclusive. Mm-hmm. And I just watched that a really good video put out by Shin on ducks and pressure and how, and it's all biologists. It's not anybody in the hunting industry. How the pressure has made ducks become so largely nocturnal feeders now.
Oh, yeah. Brandon crazy. Martin, that was yep. a great video.
Yeah, and so, I mean, it's okay, but I think we got to all keep in mind as conservationists, as hunters, that you do that pressure, you're going to have to learn to be honest and realize, at a minimum, you have to realize and wake up to the awareness of it's going to change the game for you.
Mm-hmm. Well,
even Dr. Chamberlain said mm-hmm. the number one deterrent to goblin activity over the weather, over the high pressure, over the number of hens versus anything, hunting pressure, number one detriment, and they've proved it over and over again. So sure. just keep that in mind in your bag of tricks as a hunter to know what pressure will do. What? I mean, we interviewed all these deer hunters mm-hmm. and all these, I mean, guys getting it done on public land with a bow, killing these great deer, and they're just so good, probably better than me, Dan, or anybody mm-hmm. in this room will ever be in hunting them, and they're so conscious of pressure and their footprint and never leaving scent and going just like, what's Mark Drury like? He's the most anal guy.
No question about that.
About not hunting a stand unless it's just right. Never, you know. So I'm just saying, understand the biggest component out there in hunting and getting better at it is cognizant of pressure.
Yeah, but more important than hunter success with pressure is the latest recommendations on wild turkey is that pressure is what is causing some of the downfall in turkey of hunting them before the time that they're finished with the breeding season. Mm-hmm. Now we're getting into something that affects the animals that will make it not just on hunter success, but on the whole turkey population surviving and doing better. And we're going the other way with it. And so, boy, people have got to watch the pressure, just like on both sides of the fence.
And look, it's not me, and it's not Bobby, it's not Lanny Dudley, it's not Dan either. We do need to be brave enough to listen to our biologists. And look, every single biologist is not going to be right all the time, and they do. They cite research. They spend their life behind it. But as a whole, we just – I mean, we don't have a choice. We need to listen to them. Mm-hmm. I mean, we do everything they say all the time, too, but – we have got to start, and I know we mostly largely do with our states and our government and whatever, but sometimes we don't. We
and a lot of us
pressure,
are,
you know, human pressure, political pressure, voters pressure, but we've got to listen to them.
Yeah. To add to you, Toxie, a lot of people are now, and it's great, they're choosing to self-regulate and make their own season dates, make their own limits.
That's right.
Based on what they're getting photos of on their property, and they're getting together with their neighbors.
Yes.
We talked to Chamberlain about that. He gets up with his neighbors. Well, we're getting 7 long beards and you're probably getting the 7, you know, so if you get a photo of 7 long beards on your place and you have a relatively small place, your neighbors are getting photos of the same 7. So if you say, I'm only going to take out 3 of those 7 gobblers this year, and your neighbor sees a photo of 7 gobblers.
That's right.
That's the same gobblers.
Yeah, it's not 14, it's 7.
I just think it's neat that folks are starting to, you know, make their own rules.
Yeah. You're right. That's what it's going to take to.
You sleep, I mean, other than the migratory stuff, you sleep in the bed you make, and you kind of sleep in that one too over time.
Right, no doubt.
So if you mess up the deer or the turkey thing, you're going to miss years of your life enjoying quality hunting. Mm-hmm. So I think it's brilliant that people are starting to take matters in their own hands more than their own place. I mean, you can have incredible, and I'm talking to everybody out there, you can have incredible hunting on a smaller track if you'll get together with your neighbors and cooperate with them. All of a sudden, you can have the net hunting of thousands of acres if you only have 100 or so, you know, or maybe less.
What wildlife decisions, we had this on the board over in Alabama, wildlife decisions should not be based on emotion, but on hard data that's scientifically backed.
Correct.
Then we're heading the right direction.
That's good. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're hearing that every day. So I'm glad we touched on that. We more than touched on that. We made a pretty good point. So
we're preachy about this, and so I apologize if someone takes it wrong. But the good news is also it's not negative.
Yeah.
It is the changing world we're in. More and more people are listening.
Yeah.
More and more people are paying attention. States are being more brave in doing the right thing as opposed to, you know, kneeling down to, you know, political pressure.
Yeah, think about how crazy we thought the biologists were, you know, 30, 40 years ago when they told us we needed to start shooting does.
Oh, it was like the biggest embarrassment of my life to have shot a doe back then. But then I knew, you know, it was the right thing.
Shoot, it was the greatest day of my life when I got to shoot him. I ain't gonna lie about it.
Anything for more hamburger for Lanny.
Yeah. I was like, finally.
So, Dan, you've been doing this, through the years, you've bought and sold properties, fixed them up. I mean, you really enjoy that aspect of managing a property. And And so you've got to, I was hoping you could come up with, you could tell us some things that you've done that are just this, that everybody needs to make sure that they do. Things that you've learned through the years, some tips and stuff. So can we start there?
Yeah, you know, there's a bunch of them. But the biggest tip I learned was just like yesterday. I got taken to school yesterday. I got to see what Toxie Hayes was doing for ducks. And I am on the holy grail land now. It's unbelievable. I was more impressed with that than anything I've had in a long time. But you know what? There's a lot of deals. First, you know, one of the deals we set up, you try to set up your property for pressure. Again, I can't tell you how many people put the green fields next to the main entrance roads. Mm-hmm. So those animals get disturbed every time a vehicle comes and goes out of the property. That doesn't even make sense.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a million little bit, and there's simplistic things that you think everybody would know, but just like most of the green fields are hunted in the afternoon for deer and they put them facing west, you always put your stand on the east side where you're not looking into the sun. On the west side of the field. Mm-hmm. I mean, simple things like that. Then they want to fight the proven ag theories and practices that have been done. Why do you recreate the wheel of what's been proven in cattle farming and conservation farming all these years? By God, I'm not going to need any lime this year. We're not going to just waste that money. They have no idea. They don't give their fertilizer a chance to work. The whole deal fails. Don't think you know more than what's been going on and been proven in science. You know what? They ought to go take an ag class. And that's really, I think, over the years, and Toxie and I have been doing this together a long time, that the ag side probably teaches you more about being successful in farming for wildlife. Is it?
100%.
I mean, you got to go to that side.
Yeah. It is the same thing.
You got to go to that side. So, and it's common sense, and the practices – of how much you take, and I know this gets said a lot. People will go and they'll tell you not to shoot a deer, or they'll be specific toxin. I was talking about a young deer that got shot this morning that shouldn't have got shot, that we still remember. But they've got to have willpower. These folks don't want willpower anymore. If you want to get to that best of the best wildlife property, or the best of the best population on your property, you've got to have willpower that is ironclad, enforced.
Discipline.
Yes. And if you don't, you're not going to reach it. But you know what? In today's world, and I'm not ragging on this generation, but they don't want to take the – I see a lot of them, not they. Some of them don't want to take the animal for the purpose of enjoying the hunt. They want to make that picture so they can post it.
Right.
What exactly. In the world we is that?
We talked about that over breakfast as well.
Yeah.
Your daughter's been begging you to hunt since her little brother shot the big 8 last year. You've ran a fire, dissed the fields, got stuck, got unstuck. Planted food plots, fertilized, and prayed for rain. You moved trees, limbed roads, even bought one of those fancy cell cameras.
So what's your excuse?
LS Tractor.
Moultrie has pioneered the game management category. Today, Moultrie is one of the best-selling brands of feeders and seeders in the world, and they continue to innovate with new technology that gamekeepers will rely on. Moultrie products are always field-tested and designed for hunters by hunters, combining forward-thinking innovation with time-tested practicality. Moultrie, first in feeders since 1979. All right, so guys, Moultrie is offering our listeners a 15% site-wide discount at MoultrieFeeders.com. Use code MossyOak with a capital M, MossyOak, at MoultrieFeeders.com and get that 15% discount.
For me, the more enjoyment I got out of having a place, I kind of turned the page in life when I started. It was not, and I know this sounds like a general statement, but it wasn't about killing. It really wasn't. I mean, it was, but that was secondary, just like the duck thing. When I started focus on, I just want to have a ton of ducks. And we talk about the gamekeeper life is a life of abundance. Well, that's abundant wildlife. That's what makes Dan happy now. Yeah. So if you know, he's talking about how hard and how disciplined it is to make those decisions and not shoot some stuff. Well, if you're enjoying the wildlife and the abundance of wildlife and the quality of the wildlife, that's more important than shooting stuff, then you've kind of won the battle. It'll all fall into place mm-hmm. then. If you just, oh my gosh, I'm so torn about not shooting this or not shooting that, or I've got the ducks there. And that, biologists have proven the top way to have a good, sustainable waterfowl population year in and year out to enjoy is to find your best place and never shoot a duck on it. Mm-hmm. And I mean, everybody wants to shoot, shoot, shoot. And, you know, they can't make themselves tear themselves away from doing that. But they've proven now, if you don't have somewhere for them to feel safe to go to, they're gone. It doesn't matter where you are. You know, it's just easier if you're on a major, major flyaway for them to replenish and so forth. But, you know, it's just one of those things. If you get to where the wildlife comes first, I mean, I enjoy having them more than shooting them. And do I shoot them? Yes, I love it too. But since I did that, and I don't get as disappointed if my deer aren't as big. Mm-hmm. I don't get as disappointed if, you know, I do get disappointed if I don't hear a turkey gobbling. Okay, I got my license. You know, but in general, depressed. It's just, I just will try to tell people just to help them get a more fun out of their life is if you make it about the wildlife, then it's just game on 12 months out of the year. And mm-hmm. you have so much more fun.
You know how, you know, you get that dopamine hit when you walk up to that bird that you just harvested or the excitement, you know, your heart racing.
Can't wait.
Bobby was showing me a special photo that hit his phone yesterday. And, you know, you get that same dopamine hit. You know,
yes.
That first gobbler shows up on your property or, you know, that first photo. you know, that first time you get a photo of a really big old buck. That is cool in itself.
Yes.
Dopamine. I didn't realize that's what was happening.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I think Mr. Fox said it best.
Stuff going on in your mind that gets you excited and happy.
Said a bunch of things the best.
About that transition. Yeah. He said, you know, the first part of my life was about.
He said exactly. He said.
Taking.
Well, I wanted to catch everything I could catch and kill everything I could kill.
Yeah.
And then along about halfway, the worm turned.
The worm turned.
That's exactly right.
We've got him saying that. We've recorded that. It's very, very cool.
That is when it became so clear to me. Of course, this was years ago. When he said it for the first time, but that's what it was.
You know, there's huge changes, and I don't know how many people notice, but some of these are just monster changes. One of them we did in Alabama several years. People didn't realize it used to be over there, and of course, Toxie and Bobby both got places over there and friends over there. It was the limit was 117 bucks a year.
Yeah, a buck and doe a day.
Mm-hmm. bucks
if
a
you,
year.
If you killed one every day, it was 117 day season, a deer a day.
And we took it to three. And we got called to the governor's office because we were proposing two. And Bob Riley said, Dan, do you know what you're doing to me politically, changing it from 117 to two? And that's where the third buck came in, that one has to have four on each side to do that. But you look at what that has shifted, and that whole time of when Mr. Fox and my dad and them grew up, and it was that hunt, 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 take. Now it's changing. Now it's managing. But look at what's happened to the deer in Alabama. There hadn't been a book deer in Alabama in so long before that, and now that people are knocking them out. Mm-hmm. The quality's there. Mm-hmm. The quality of the hunt improves. Not only the animal, the whole quality of the hunt improves for the people.
Yeah.
So
public,
I mean,
and private.
Yes.
Right, everywhere.
Well, you know, the good thing, I mean, Alabama, they would, you know, you're forgetting about the little guy. You know, we got to kill our deer to eat. Okay, you know what? You can still kill. What's the limit on does over there?
It's pretty high.
One a day, I think.
Yeah, one a day. Or I mean, it's a big number.
Yeah.
You can kill more than you and 10 families can eat if you want to. And shoot the does. It'll just help the herd and slowly getting it back in balance. And, I mean, you know, they could have made more radical changes, but they didn't. And they found a balance between helping it get better for everybody. And the good thing is, just like a lot of stuff, Mississippi's been quite a leader in listening to their biologists over the years. And once, as example, like the first year they made it illegal to shoot a jake, unless you're, you know, a kid. And then over the national teeth, and it was the guys that go, hey, you don't forget about the little guy. It's so hard for us to even see a turkey, and I can't shoot my jake now. But what happened was, within a year or two, it improved the quality on public hunting land so much because they quit shooting all the jakes, and then now everybody's having way more gobbling turkeys to hunt on public land. And so what I was just getting at, if you'll just be patient, and not protest and raise a bunch of what. If you've got legitimate concerns, voice them. That's fine.
Yep.
Just be patient and see what happens. The next thing you know, everybody's having better quality of hunting by listening.
Mm-hmm. So, Dad, give me some talk to us about, say, you. Some people, myself included, don't have a big place. Mm-hmm. But what are things that you can do on a small property? And I'm kind of expecting you to go down the road of a feeder and patterning deer in an area. But I also want to make sure that you tell how you do it, Derek, you as well, so that it's done safely. Because we don't want to promote any disease, any of those issues.
You know, a lot of the – and I think a lot of the manufacturers on any feed side – or the device side, which we all are in, have been extremely cognizant to make sure that items of alpha toxin are addressed. Those have been addressed legally. They've been addressed through state offices. They've been addressed through marketing in the whole U.S. We try to make people aware of that. You know what? If a guy is not smart to that, he may come across some cattle industry corn that's red hot and puts it out, and he has no idea. He may not damage the deer because they've got a little higher level of resiliency, but he can sure damage the fowl, the turkeys and the quail, and maybe could damage the deer. So those deals need to be watched. But let's get by that and say we're using all solid, well-known, well-branded products that are watching that. Then a feeder is a great tool to pattern and to hole. And here, if a guy has a small track, and let's say the guy has to work, you know, 5 days a week, and he's got a small track, and he's trying to make sure he's got a chance at game, that feeder's a great tool to feed every day. And those animals are smart. They're going to go to where they get fed every day. He's got a great chance of those animals being there. Now that, especially like the limits are in, and people can only kill so many, you know, then his neighbor, it doesn't matter if the guy's got a huge place next door, there's still limits involved where that guy's going to have the same opportunity. The best deal that could happen to him, he may say, man, I don't have a chance because I'm bordering the biggest place. He's got a great chance because the guy on the big place is probably practicing the best wildlife management can be done, and he gets included for free. Mm-hmm. It doesn't get – they need to look at the opposite side of the coin that they're talking about. That's the best scenario he could possibly be in.
Now the big guy may need some help with some does too.
Yeah, well, yeah. Or whatever. Probably but so. But he's going to benefit from what goes on that on the beach. So it's not a have and have not issue on that. The guy can benefit and can have what he wants to have, you know, and create that. But again, that guy on the small property has to be sensitive to not overtake. He can't shoot every deer that's in there. He'll run them out and they won't be back in there. And again, it was like talking about the ducks imprint on good places and all these animals imprint on good places. You think they don't imprint on bad places also? Mm-hmm. They know where they've gotten shot and run off. They're not idiots. They're smart. They know how to avoid it, especially those big old bugs. So that guy has to do that and be smart with that. But there is no doubt, especially here in the South, that the small landowner guy is not – he doesn't have large access to have large numbers, but he can have the same quality of hunting. What do you think, Tosh?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And there's a, you know, I'm still all about, you know, we got such a limited amount of time in this life and enjoying it the most. I think you get more enjoyment when you go in together with your neighbors. Mm-hmm. But that's how to make, I'm telling you, that's the easiest, cheapest way on the planet to make a small place a big place. Mm-hmm. Is get together with your neighbors.
We had a guy call in and order 4 subscriptions to the Gamekeeper magazine for his neighbors.
Great idea.
That? I saw that was yesterday.
Wasn't yeah.
It? I saw that. Yeah.
And, you know, that was kind of, he was starting this deal.
I mean, it's a small thing, but I've got a joining landowner's a really big farmer. And I just, my little story on that, and he has a pretty significant size field that butts up right into the corner of places I own that actually need help so bad. And so to keep him in farming soybeans, which I feel like of all the things he could farm is best for wildlife, I've been buying him some of his beans to farm it with so I can help him keep doing that. Because what's going to happen is, especially the deer, but even other stuff, will eat him out of house and home. And, you know, if I want him to be able to plant there, And so I'm just, it's the best thing I could do for our deer.
Yeah, a little is game to help him out subsidy. With some. Yeah.
That's right.
Teamwork.
Yeah. Gamekeeper subsidy. That's right.
Yeah. The whole having a small place, and you just kind of have to look at it a little bit different. Mm-hmm. You got to watch that pressure. We've kind of already addressed that, but being able to go in there, plant, having a diverse place, food plots mm-hmm. are a big important
that's right.
part.
Mm-hmm.
An orchard with some fruit trees,
yeah, different right. type, yeah. different stages of cover.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, and I've been running your feeders, and I've mm-hmm. it's amazing to me how patternable the deer become, mm-hmm. and I like the fact that like your feeder you can program it at different times, but I like a midday. Mm-hmm. And
trying to get them to show up.
Now, Bobby, everybody knows you're doing that midday for the turkeys. Everybody knows that.
But I hear people say, and I mean, I just want to ask, because Derek, I want to hear from you. I hear people say sometimes, well, when you put up a feeder, it makes deer go nocturnal. What are they talking? Why would they say that?
No, I have seen that happen, but I think there's a lot more factors in it than just a feeder. I mean, kind of touching on what Dan and Toxie have talked about, like if you put a feeder out but you have it next to an access road, or you know, if it's right on a property line and your neighbor's cutting fire breaks, or I think there's a lot more factors than just single correlation of putting a feeder out and the deer going nocturnal. A great way to mitigate that is kind of what you talked about, is having a timer to where you can set it to where it'll go off in a limited quantity, right? So if you want to feed different feeds with the gravity feeder or protein pellets, you're kind of limited on what you can do there. You know, we have some options for you, one being our gravity feeder, but that gives them option to eat all night. And some of the newer feeders we have, like our Ranch Series auger feeder.
Yep, yeah, I was going to bring that one up.
It's kind of giving you the ability to feed a lot of different things, but still with the same timer feature to where you can put it into a chute or distribute it around.
Well, I'll say about that one also, a big benefit to just having only a trough feeder is it protects the integrity of the feed. Because if you're feeding some kind of rat, even corn and some roasted beans or something like that are great for deer, if you just fill up a trough and it sits out in the weather, you could
moisture issue sometimes.
Yeah, big time. Especially funguses might be more mm-hmm. prevalent. You're feeding a better quality. But he's right that if you do limit it to only daytime, you can't help but help their nocturnalism. Now, I realize you can probably reverse any good you do by being silly about the pressure you put mm-hmm. on.
That's right.
But with some common sense, there's no – and we've bred that into our deer. Just think about Mississippi, especially, and Alabama mm-hmm. for 100 years maybe or so, a bunch. If it had antlers visible above hairline, yep. it went down. Boom, that's boom, right. boom, mm-hmm. and we killed, especially in Alabama, every horned buck that – someone saw they shot, basically. Mm-hmm. And so you can't help but over time, not only the pressure, but you're breeding into them. The ones that are more nocturnal survive. Mm-hmm. The ones that are more mm-hmm. nocturnal survive over and over and over. The ones that are less nocturnal are killed over and over. Well, you breed it into them. And no wonder our deer in the South, because we've been hunting them longer, are so much more nocturnal and rougher to deal with than deer in the Midwest.
What
common sense, we bred it into them. You're not going to put a feeder up and change it overnight, but you can change it for the better. And the thing I found is by having some out in a very smart and healthy way and making sure it's only a daytime feed, mm-hmm. and then also putting some pressure on your predators, like coyotes and bobcats, deer predation mm-hmm. predators. I have seen a big turn in, say, the last 8 or 10 years in the movement and feeling more comfortable moving and moving during daylight of our deer. Just me, but it's made a difference.
One of the deals that, Bobby, that the feeders help do, and it's kind of overlooked, a lot of people just will pour it on the ground, which is not a great way to avoid disease.
We need to discourage people.
Yeah, that's the point I'm making. You don't want to do that. But the camera surveys, one of the biggest comments when we were developing the camera all the way through is it was like Christmas coming to somebody. Guys would hunt, I've never seen a big deer on our place. We don't have big deer. Well, guess what? Those cameras came and all of a sudden, there's pictures of big deer standing by the feeders because they're coming to the feeder. They had no idea. And it gave people a hope. Hey, I have these big deer like so-and-so's killing and doing that. that was one of the biggest benefits of that. And you combine that feeder and camera aspect, and it really works good to get to let those people have that dream list to see that, see what they've got.
To your point on pressure, though, you know, our deer over in Marengo County in Alabama, there's been so much pressure. That
careful now, you're getting close. You're getting close.
Well, that's where my family's from. So
you stay on the east side of that river and you'll be fine.
They're so it's bred into them so hard now because of pressure. They have a college degree. They walk around looking up.
PhD.
I can't tell you how many hunts I've just gone and sat there with my hands in my pockets. No matter what came out, I had, I don't know how many deer in front of me within 20 yards. Just sat there with my hands in my pockets just so they got used to me.
How many times within the industry have we said all these years, now Bobby, you're right in the middle of this group, if you can kill a turkey or a deer down here in this environment, you can kill them anywhere in the world. Anywhere in the United States, it's a piece of cake. These are the toughest ones there's ever been.
I think so.
Yeah,
we call them
the Southeasterns.
Yeah, we think they're even different than the Easterns. Yeah. We think they're the Southeasterns. Yeah, that's right.
So you're gonna Bobby, you're going to make people angry that live north of the Mexican.
It's true. Yeah.
Wow. So, Dan, looking back through the years that you've been doing this, what's the biggest deer you've been able to grow?
We've grown some dandies, you know, in Texas. But I'm just saying, in Texas is where I kind of learned and saw what could be done with those deer, and you try to implement some of the things that you see all over the United States. The neatest deal about our job is we all got invited. Somebody would call and say, hey, I want to buy some cameras or some feeders. Come to my ranch. Tell me what I ought to do. And so you got to go to everybody's farm.
Okay.
And you get to see the best ideas of what they were doing. And then you come back and incorporate them into your place. And that's worked for us by doing that. Mm. You know, we had killed some, my son, we were working cows during the deer rut over there that we had on the place. We had one of the places in Alabama, and there's bucks chasing does, and he goes and gets in the stand and knocks a 168, 169 out in Alabama. That's off the chart. It's as good. And it was a 6-year-old typical 10 with double flyers on him. And I had seen that deer one time on a camera, and it was 2 years earlier. But that's how good they are at staying and hiding. And I'm talking about, it's just, those are tremendous deer, but they got to have willpower to not kill. It's so many people, and they want to have a reason to shoot the deer. And we've about got them broken on saying, oh, that deer didn't have but one horn. I'm killing. He's a cull.
He's a cull.
That cull phrase is, let's put what that really means to somebody. That gives them an excuse to pull the trigger. Let's be open about it. That's what that is. Are there culls? Yes, but they are very, very, very few. Even if they have antler injuries and they have that, they're still passing on great genetics if they have the rest of the features that are there. So you go back to the willpower deal. Employing all that has allowed us to grow and have those good deer. Over in Georgia, the genetics were fantastic. You know, we grew and we killed 4 Boone and Crockett deer in 4 years with us and the surrounding landowners. In the southeastern United States, in Georgia, I don't know if that's ever been done. I've never heard of that.
Well, you just kind of reiterated what we were talking about earlier. It's not just your place. It's your co-op, your group of friends that surround you, and you all work together. And all of you grew those 4 deer. Mm-hmm.
That goes back to the philosophically, at least, to Tom Kelly's book. And he's talking about deer hunters, you know, and turkey hunters.
You need to tell it, the 10th Legion.
Yeah, that's absolutely the solitude of a turkey hunter. And, you know, did you hear anything this morning? He might have heard 3. And it's like, I think I heard a Jake maybe one time, but I didn't really hear anything. But then deer hunters and the deer camp collective, and they're like, and you can do this with your neighbors too. He just did it. It's like, how was your hunt this weekend? And you go, hey, we got 5 at camp this weekend. So if somebody killed a big deer, y'all felt successful too. So, you know, you can, that cooperative of hunting, that's what Dan just said. He didn't say we specifically, we, the surrounding landowners, were able to do that.
Give me a couple of ideas of things that you've seen traveling around that you've incorporated.
Oh, gosh, there's just millions of good ideas, Bobby, from the lodges to the properties. But I like laying out the property when you come in and being able to sculpt and put that. I mean, Jack Nicklaus put his touch on every golf course he did, and he was wildly successful at what he did. I think Toxie and I have earned our time in the woods. You too. You learn what works and don't work, as we touched on earlier. I actually first saw it at George Mann's years ago. Never did he have a green field anywhere near a main road. Mm-mm. Because you're running those animals Mm-mm. off and you're creating pressure. You ought to go the other way. If they're back and hidden and you never see them, those deer may pick their head up and hear the truck, but you're not running them off. That allows you to keep those animals on there. Then you apply the rules of what gets shot or what doesn't get shot. And again, I believe this, and everybody needs to manage for what they want, but we manage by age class. Unless, Tox and I both agreed on this, unless it's our grand youngins, we're going to let them kill anything they want to kill. But we manage by age class. And I think if you're not managing by age, this is personal opinion of mine, but I think it's pretty well viewed across, you're not managing your herd correctly. Well, age classes, yeah. You should have a perfect bell curve. By managing,
yeah,
by
it's
age.
Hard to do the perfect yeah, bell curve. But look, if you even try to do that, don't judge that you fell short or what. Just if you even try to, and everybody can't look at a deer like Dan can and say that's a 4-year-old. But you can learn relatively young, middle, old, and you can get that pretty easy. Mm-hmm. And so if you even try to go in that direction, you're going to help your place a lot.
Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to ask you a question. You can say yes or no.
Yes.
Mineral licks. Do you put out mineral?
No. You want a reason why for it?
Go ahead.
State of Alabama, it's illegal to put out anything but white salt. Mm-hmm. You need to look with your local game and fisheries. Did y'all know that in the state? I bet you did. Mm-hmm. Illegal to put anything out except pure white salt in Alabama for deer.
I wonder why.
Because they don't want people trying to influence the biology of that animal through their own that could affect that animal's nutrition.
Hmm. That's yeah, because I guess you could put maybe you might put minerals out that work.
Bobby's got to make a run to the Ponderosa quick. Bobby. He'll be back in a minute.
Well, you know, you can't help it that they're minerals for cattle that are legal.
And the deer go
and
use
they
them.
May go to the cattle.
But game and fish had to have those same rules.
So, yeah. Bobby, don't worry about it. Go buy you one old cow and put her out there. You're good.
You're good to go.
All right, Bobby, go. I'm sorry. I wanted to explain that.
No, that's good.
Okay.
Okay, guys, this was news to me. So I called Chuck Seitz, the director of Fish and Wildlife at Alabama. And as I understand it, in Alabama, if you purchase the feed permit, you can provide whatever minerals you want, including bile rocks. If you don't, then you're limited to the white salt. So Dan's been working on a property in Georgia for the last few years, and I don't think he realized the change. So we're going to give him a pass on this one. All right. Back to the show.
Like protein feed, are you putting that? Are you feeding that?
I think that the deer farming industry is different from the wild deer industry. And I think in the wild side, it's more of a it can help, but the deer are more free to move and you may not get daily benefit. Like one-a-day vitamins need to be taken every day. You may not get that every day. In a deer farming environment, which is totally different, yes, of course that would help. But there's no doubt that deer needs to get him to a 16% protein level, mm-hmm. if possible. Anything after that is it spelled out, and all the fecal studies prove that. I mean, all this has hard data behind it. So native environment stuff, 4, 5, 6, 7, some of the clovers, 25, 35, Prolina clovers, 42%. You get to ultra high levels, soybeans carry them there, the soybean forage matter. All that adds in. We did a program with Purina one time, and one of the bylines that we had is feeding is more than, total game management is more than just a feeder or feeding. Hmm. It's all that included. So when you say supplemental feed, you have to have your plots, you have to have your farming, you have to have, if you choose to feed supplemental feed, if you choose to feed corn, No, don't mistake either with corn. Most of it runs around 8% protein. There's a lot of stuff that's worse than that.
Mm-hmm. So, like with your feeders,
yes.
Do you leave them one place for a year or two and then move them to another location to let that soil rebuild itself?
Well, it depends if it's well. All that is based on the soil. To me, Bobby, if it's a wet spot and those animals ingest the soil. And as they're eating and they paw it back and then the soil erodes from there in a non-well-drained area, you may need to move it more than that than every year. If it's a hard, like concrete area that's very resilient to that, you're going to have better time. Those are factors that needs to be looked at and common sense applied. And I would apply the acid test. Does this appear like a hog lot that's breeding disease, then we don't want that for our wildlife. You don't want your turkeys walking in that and doing that. You don't want your deer doing that. If that's the case, it needs to be moved. But apply common sense to it.
So I think I've kind of hit the core things, but mm-hmm. is there anything else that you feel like you do that might be special that I got to ask you to tell? You mm-hmm. wouldn't just normally tell somebody. Derek's smiling. Yeah. I know that you've got some kind of.
In Alaska, when we were up there and I was guiding in Alaska all those years, we had a little deal that because you're out and away from everything, and one of the items that you always said when you had a guest is you always used your guest knife that keeps your knife sharp. Down south here, you want to keep your animals on your place sharp. I'm going to call Bobby and go turkey hunting over at Bobby's place, and I may keep my place sharp. There you go. So, but one of the reasons I think we were successful in a lot of the turkey events, Bobby, at the Alabama property that you knew over there, is we never allowed, and in almost 30 years, the absolute most ever we took was four. And this is all thousands of acres. Four turkeys. Mm-hmm. We were able to grow spurs. We were able to grow turkeys. We had an age class in them. And that allowed us to have a better wildlife. But that fit us. There may be people, if you want to kill everyone you got every year, that's great. But you may not have mm-hmm. them some year.
That's not great, actually.
But for them to have that choice is great.
Yeah, well, I mean, but research is now vetted that
yes.
having a much lower gobbler-to-hen ratio from shooting too many is that mm-hmm. it's not just not good for your place. It's a big headwind to nesting
success. It ain't good for the species.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's kind of like compounding interest, but in the negative sense. You take too many and then, I mean, someone said something about it too, like deer not shooting enough. And there is obviously something to that. Or turkeys and, oh, it's better off to, you know what? You said it, or Bobby said, or Lenny, or Dudley, anybody said, oh my God, I got this new place this year. What would be the one thing I could say to make you more excited to go than anything?
Found a turkey?
No.
No.
It hadn't been hunted in years. Oh, and light bulbs go off.
Yeah, that's true.
So if that's the case, manage your own place that way.
Yeah.
If you got enough land, create different zones where, you know, we hunt harder here, but we've got a sanctuary because they've also proven, just like the ducks especially, but if turkeys, deer can live right under your nose under a lot of pressure, but they've got to have the cover mm-hmm. and the bedding to pull it off. They live right outside your back door and watch you every day. Turkeys, ducks, they have got to have a safe place.
Bobby, on your podcast, and I'm going to change horses that I've been riding a long time, I have always been the pressure advocate. To me, that's since day one has been it. I'm going to change today. Pressure becomes number two. Willpower is probably number one.
Huh. Yeah.
Because you're never going to have it if you allow people harvest your property.
Let's get real good about point. It. A lot of what causes that pressure to do the wrong thing is your own status symbol, ego, whatever.
The willpower.
You know, self-esteem, worried about bragging what you killed and showing the picture of the duck buck or whatever that case is. And so, hey, you know what? And I am not sitting here to judge anybody, and I don't want to be judged. But We're just offering some insight as to helping you enjoy things.
People
more.
Want you want to look at the real. I mean, you look at somebody's finances.
Yeah.
They ever going to build up a great portfolio with no willpower?
No.
That's Safe now zone. new yep. number one.
I like it.
Yeah, that does make sense. Well, so Dan, with all the through the years you have in these different places, mm-hmm. how have you poacher proofed them? What are some secrets that you have? Because people got when they find out Dan Moultrie is
you can't, but Bobby, that's not relevant to the rest of the world. No. He became chairman of the wildlife committee for the whole state of Alabama.
That helps.
So yeah, that doesn't hurt. That doesn't hurt much.
Okay, so let's back
but,
up.
But really, here's what you do is. And one of the deals when Commissioner Lawley came in that we met in those early days, we wanted to have wardens. And it, Coach Dye used to say when all his assistant coaches would come in to the lunch meeting, he'd walk in and every one of them's looking down at the table because they don't want anybody talking to. They don't want Coach all up in them and getting on them. The same went on with game wardens. Y'all being your lunch place over here in the old days, that game warden walked in, everybody's looking down at the table. They don't want to be involved with it. We wanted the other deal. Let's not be a state agency that has that kind of feeling. Let's have a warden that helps folks. Let's have a biologist that helps folks. It's become that now. And if you're not involving those people with your place, that's your secret to keeping the poachers off. You want to have it preserved. You have a great relationship with Game and Fish. And make sure in that local breakfast or lunch spot, everybody knows that you're best friends with the warden, you're best friends with Game and Fish, you support Game and Fish, and that by golly, if your landowner right gets abused, you'll have them out there to take care of the effects of that.
And offer to pay for their lunch.
Yeah, and that is absolute. You need to be involved with that. That stops that. But I truly believe as a whole society of hunting in the United States, we've moved way down the road from 40 years ago, Todd.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no question.
I mean,
no
we're
question.
Way down the road.
Yep. Yep.
Now,
we have.
Now, are we still out of that? And people, no, but it's better. And we're getting there. But that's the secret to that, Bobby. You have to, and as bad as this is, you catch somebody, you got to make a case. You want to know the real secret? You better make it easier for them to go illegally hunt somewhere else in your place. I want them to, if they get caught on any of our places, I want them to go, holy smokes, we will never, ever, ever, ever do that again after what we just went through.
Cameras have got to have been a big part
of
that.
Cameras are off the chart.
Yeah.
You've got admissible evidence using the cameras. That you can stop illegal activities.
Yep, the quality of the cameras are so much better. Just in the last 2-3 years,
yeah, it gets better.
Shocking
and better.
How clarity. And so you know you do have to have a clear enough picture they can possibly identify them.
Hey Bobby, way back when the very first camera we came out with it. And we were using one up there, but the first one I ever brought
it
to Toxie.
It looked like a boat. I mean, a bulldozer battery. It was this huge box.
And Toxie goes, well, it's pretty good, but the pictures are hard to look at sometimes. You can't tell. It's come a long way since then, guys.
Really
and now you can see a fly landing on something.
So have you got a tip? Do you like have a bait camera that you put out that you hope that guy sees camera?
Let me tell you, and people, and this is, it's good that your podcast opens this up. You need to talk about poaching issues. You need to talk about people illegal hunting issues. All that needs to be said. But you want to know how you catch them? You got people downloading your SD card on your camera to find out what you're seeing without them doing that. You put a camera on a camera.
Yeah.
That's what the wardens do. That's what other people do.
A couple, actually.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you have cameras on them. Then you'll find out what's going on. And with the now – besides SD card cameras, cell cameras, and couple those together, before they can ever get to your camera, you got them.
Yeah.
That image is sent to you in seconds. You got them.
Yeah, the picture's already taken and sent. It just takes a while for it to get through the airwaves. That can help, no question. Yeah. You can take a very inexpensive cell camera, you know, whatever, deer camera, and turn it into a surveillance camera very easily.
Lanny, what you thinking?
You need a cell phone signal, that's it.
Lanny.
What do you mean?
We've talked about.
I'm thinking about turkey season.
We've talked about some of these guys. Have y'all heard about this? Some of these guys have got these, Mac, help me out with my terminology, but they like these ATN thermal binoculars.
Don't put people's
ideas. Oh, we're going to talk about poaching stories now?
And they would see, they would be able to see an infrared camera.
Yeah, using thermals
to
see the infrared on the cameras and knowing where they are.
Yeah, but the message out there with all those people there now, cameras that don't have a heat signature at all.
Yeah.
So that's going to be it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, I'm going to tell you, you know, if you slip around on somebody else's place, more than likely you're going to have a picture taken. I mean,
that's true.
It's just the way it is now.
If they knew, and Bobby, y'all know the industry in Toxie, there isn't just a bunch of cameras. There's millions and and millions of cameras in wildlife and landowner use. One of our, Ashley, you know, sells to a sundry of different folks. She's one of her best customers is a land group that watches apartments and goes on in their apartment groups. And they buy a ton of cameras and they are watching those apartments. And if somebody doesn't think, wherever you are in today's world, if you don't think you're having your picture taken, you are sadly mistaken. You are getting that picture taken. Mm-hmm.
So let me give you my tip too. This is a legitimate tip for everybody out there. That's not, you know, it doesn't matter to wildlife that much, but it definitely matters to the human you're trying to get a picture of. Even if it might be your buddies in the hunting club, you don't want to know you got their picture going to a certain place. But I tried it and it works unbelievable. Actually, the game warden's the one said to do this. But you take the face of the camera, be sure you tape all the important holes ahead of time, just make sure. And then, so, you know, whatever the flash, especially the lens, you know, two or three things that are important, the little,
the sensors and the lens all that stuff.
So then you just spray that, like you can buy that automotive adhesive, spray that adhesive on it and just put it face down in a bunch of leaves and dirt and stuff and just let them stick to it. Good. And they'll stay there too, but by the way, in fact, the camera I did that to, I put the name on it, Dirty One. And you, then when you put it on a tree, including, you can put that on the antenna. It won't affect reception at all. For wrapping around the tree, forget these straps like they send you. Get some rusty, just a single heavy rusty wire and put that around the tree. So the first time when the guy worked for me, Gary, y'all remember, he was catching some people. He did catch them, actually. And he was putting it where people were coming in. And the game warden said, hey, don't just put the camera up. Do this to it. And so after the season, I went in to get that camera.
You couldn't find it, could you?
And I had my phone out, and I knew the road it was on because I saw the pictures coming in all the time, and I know it's right here. So I start walking by it. It just took, and it took my picture. Boom! I was like, okay. And I said, the tree's right there. Oh yeah, there's that tree right there. And I'm looking, and it took me at least
that's a great
time. Over 5 minutes, and I was looking right at it in the wide open. And finally, I saw where it was, and it literally made it go away completely. And I know we got great mossy oak camo on or everything. Mm-hmm. There's nothing like putting those leaves and stuff on there. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I've tried to hide them from people that I thought, you know, I saw where someone had left the toilet paper and all and trying to go turkey hunting on it. So I put one there, and I went through all these gyrations trying to hide that camera and ended up not taking a – good enough picture and stuff, but this is a great way to hide your camera that's cheap.
The strap.
And don't forget, the strap will give you away too, but the camera will. I mean, you try that, and buddy, they bet poachers better look out because they'll never see it.
They're ragging on your strap.
Well, that's why we, us.
Well, you're not going to sell rusty wire. You know.
But we have a couple of different mounting options with our cell cams now. They'll help alleviate that, but not only will they help alleviate concealment, they'll also give you better options for angles.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying do it on all your cameras. There's nothing better and easier than that strap. But if you want to really hide one, use that little piece of rusty wire. You can't even see it around the tree.
Nosler is known for their bullets, and now they're making suppressors. Nosler suppressors are made for hunting. Adding a Nosler suppressor to your rifle will make you a quieter, more accurate, and more effective hunter. Protect your hearing and disturb less game with a Nosler suppressor. The time to hunt quiet is now. Learn more at Nosler.com.
The Ferminator is the industry's most versatile piece of food plot equipment, allowing plotters to do every step of the process, working the soil, adding seed and soil supplements, and compacting. From start to finish, with a single implement, it's hassle-free by design. Set it for the seed size and simply drive the tractor, and the Ferminator does the rest. Check it out at theferminator.com.
You guys have some new technology in your feeders that you wanted to tell us about, some Bluetooth stuff. What is this all?
It's not amazing.
Not only Bluetooth, but I'm going to let Derek, because I don't want to stumble in it and say the wrong thing, but it's Bobby, to see all this evolve from guys like Derek that comes out, it's off the chart. That it's the same technology kind of that went the camera route, but then we're applying other things that will work with your phone. They're not phone that everybody uses, but tell them about all the new stuff there.
So we've kind of listened to our consumers, and we've taken some of our most popular products and try to tailor them to the end use case, right? So you want to talk about pressure. I mean, how many times do you have to visit your feeder to fill it up or to change your battery or to even find out if it's working, right? So we have a couple of different options for you. One that we're debuting today that we came out with this year is a Bluetooth timer. So we took our best-selling Pro Hunter 2 feeder kit, and we took our timer, and we took the screen and buttons off of it. Well, we have one button, so we took all but one button off. And we put a Bluetooth module in it to where you can communicate with your phone as long as you're within range. So this doesn't come with a subscription service. It doesn't. The app is free, so it's low cost of entry to get you to where, even if it's hot outside, you don't even have to leave the AC of your truck. You just have to pull within range, and you can pull it up on your phone. You can change your times. You can do everything you can with our current timer. That is a great option for, you know, a small property, or if you have it in your backyard, or many different situations.
That helps with pressure too.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And
even if you pull up in the truck and stuff, you're still not going there and put your scent all over everything.
And so a step up from that. So we're really proud of that. I'm really happy with that, the way that product has turned out. It's been a great idea. I have one outside of the window of my office in Birmingham that I play with all the time, you know. But, you know, a step up from that, Moultrie Mobile is coming out with the Feed Hub, which is a cellular version of that, right? So it does come with a subscription service. However, the amount of data you get back is pretty huge.
It's huge.
You know, you get confirmation that your feeder has gone off. You can get, you know, warned that, you know, there may be a problem. Maybe you have a corn stalk stuck down your feeder spin plate, mm-hmm. you know. You get confirmation that your feed level. So there's actual sensor inside the hopper that communicates with the timer to where it'll take a physical measurement of what is in your hopper and communicate that back to you. We have preset settings to where you can select what hopper you have, and it already knows everything, and you just keep going with, you know, all your programming. But we also have, we talked about earlier, the calibration. So if you make your own feeder, you know, not only can you put this Bluetooth timer and the feed hub on our feeders, but you can put it on anything that you have.
Nice.
If you have a homemade feeder in your backyard, or even if you have a competitor feeder, you know, it'll work with them. So we're really excited about releasing both of those options, to the consumer to alleviate pressure. You know, you can communicate with it. You can do feed now with the feed hub. You can hit feed now, it'll go off, and same with the Bluetooth timer. If you're within range, you can make it go off right now for whatever duration you want with your phone.
But the feed hub, I can do from the office.
Correct.
Yeah. Anywhere I am.
I'm going to tell you, I'm going to go out on a limb right now for your spot, wherever that is, your deep, dark, secret spot.
Nobody
sees you go in. The deer, once you know, I would encourage people to get one of their biggest ones so you never set foot in there again.
That is
a life changer, game changer, to never have to go bother at all.
Feed Hub, the biggest complaint when the phones would ring over the past 40-something years of somebody mad that their feeder didn't go off, or Bobby was having to drive back over to Alabama, and he'd call and say, Moultrie, the feeder didn't go off, and I've been trying to get it ready for deer season. It didn't go off. What in the world is the problem with y'all stuff? Feed Hub, you can tell when it fed, how much it fed, if it fed, and you can adjust any of it by hand. Mm-hmm. No more did you wait 3 weeks or a month to go hunting a place to find out, to arrive and find out the feeder is totally full. Now, when you have that lease in Kentucky or Kansas, you know exactly what's going on while you're not there.
Yeah, and that's the biggest piece of information is battery percentage and feed remaining, right? And so that's our Bluetooth timer does a great job when you're within range of giving you the estimation like we have on our current feeder now. So when you put feed in there, it'll give you an estimation based on your settings of how much is left. But the feed hub takes it a step further to where you get that information before you go to your lease 3-4 hours away. So do I need to take 8 bags? Or do I need to take 16? Do I take 4 batteries with me? Do I need to take 8?
Hmm.
But also, you know, we have perpetual power options to where you can actually put a solar panel on there, and you're eliminating one factor of you having to go back in there.
I was going
to
say with my other comment, get the panels. Little, it's not much at all. Get the solar panel, and then you're done.
It works really well.
Oh, it's incredible.
Keeps in charge.
And y'all's batteries are better than any other batteries I've ever run.
They're really good. Derek's done a lot of research over here. Hey, y'all can't believe there'll be Derek. I can't get him to even give me anything anymore because we pour
good for
through
you.
It and no,
good
and,
for you.
No, but we'll pour through it and he'll go, why do you find all that little stuff and every little bit? But that's what, because of his knowledge of that and refining, we've got the very best of the best. If there's a better battery, we'd have it.
Because he's listening. That's the answer.
Well, I'll tell you the best thing, exactly right. The best thing about that battery, and I'm pretty proud of it because there's not many other options like it in the marketplace, is our safety top. So if you know anything, I'm not an electrician. I'm an engineer by trade, but I'm mechanical. I'm not anything to do with electricity. However, if you know anything about electronics, you know, if you cross the poles on a DC circuit like that, it can become disastrous.
I've set a fire in the back of my truck once with one.
Right.
Shorting it.
So
it could have gotten bad if I wasn't right there.
I'm never positive which one's negative.
Oh, here we go.
So the best thing about that battery is that it has a plastic top. Our gator clips have protective sheathing on them that you can put in place to help. But if it actually does touch, it's insulated. However, the top of that battery has a cover over the posts and a divider in the middle. So not only do you have protection on your gator clips with our products, but our batteries make sure even if you use it on somebody else's that it divides those poles to where it's very, very difficult for them to touch when they're vibrating inside of a feeder.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm looking at it right now.
My pitch form, and this is totally anecdotal, but it has happened again and again and again with me. So I've got their batteries. I've gotten some other batteries. I've run down here and bought some at, you know, Walmart or the sporting goods store or the co-op and stuff too. So I probably, 4 or 5 different types of batteries over the years. And then you use them for the fish feeder or for the feeder or some purpose. And then you forget about them and you go look at the next year to do it. And the battery was left in there. It was run down. And you try to charge them. They won't even charge. And you've thrown them away. I've thrown away so many batteries. It's the only battery I've found that, you know, when I go back, it would actually still recharge and won't go bad on you. So over time, you're just like, it's worth every penny. Well, if it costs a dollar or two more for these batteries, I don't know what the price is. It's worth it. Because if you run many feeders or you use many batteries for a purpose at all, it's going to last longer. It has done it again and again. I'm saying that unsolicited of them even being here. It's so frustrating to be out there and go and take time off and be in the middle of your place and get the thing set up for hunting season or whatever, and the battery won't even work, you know?
Mm-hmm. Bobby, don't forget, too, all that applies, and this is not touched on as much, but all that applies to if a guy doesn't even hunt, but he's the most avid fisherman, he doesn't want that fish feeder not to be feeding those brim every day on his pond down here. Mm-hmm. No. All this same technology applies to that. He knows if his fish are being fed. He knows when it gets low. He knows to go buy a sack of fish feed at the co-op. All that same deal applies. So not only is it on the hunting side, but on the fishing side.
The best thing, it's great for your ponds. It's so critical that people use it. But let me tell you, it is worth, throw all that out the window to have, for me especially, where you get so much of the enjoyment of having that fishing spots kids. It's so critical. And I mean, just like yesterday, one of my very dear friends, I hadn't heard from him in a little while, had his granddaughters in town. Hey, can we go fishing? I want to go out to, it was daddy's lake, not mine. And, because I know there's a pier there. And I thought to myself, you know what? We have not been running the feeder. It's been winter. A lot of times they don't feed as much in winter. But I should have been out there and gotten it set up. And I hadn't. And he called me last. Send me a picture of all the fish you catch. This lake's loaded with brim and stuff. He said, oh, no pictures today, but we had a good time. I felt so bad because if we'd have been running that feeder, those two little granddaughters were in jerking brim out right and left. Uh-huh. It is so much fun to take kids, you know, and fish on the dock where, and not to mention the quality of the fish.
That's the gateway drug, Dan.
And you don't have to be a kid either. I love catching those brim, and you see that feed hit the surface, and they all start bubbling at the top. It's fun. Hey guys, Dudley from Gamekeepers here. I want to tell you about the all-new Gunner Dog Bowl. It's designed for home and built for travel. It's customizable, leak-resistant, light on weight, solid on durability, and rust-proof. Like other Gunner products, they're made in Nashville and designed for everywhere.
Hey, this is Toxie Hayes with Mossy Oak. You know, hunting and fishing, game keeping, and taking care of the land with my family is my life. And I'll be honest with you, the one app that I'm on every day and use more than anything is OnX. It literally has changed my life. From property ownership to roads, everything to do with understanding the land better. I even use it to plot acreages all the time. Every function I could dream of. Use coupon code Mossy Oak to save 20% on your next OnX subscription. Trust me, you'll be so glad you did.
Great fish feeding tip. A lot of people don't know. They turn on the feeder and let it run 15, 20 seconds, and that came from a lot of the catfish industry and seeing them feed, and they love to see the water boil. Brim got little bitty stomachs. Mm-hmm. Multiple feedings are better for brim than one big feeding.
At least four, I would say.
Yes, you need at least four. You need multiple small feedings as opposed the brim will come up and feed, go digest it, come up and feed. They get more to it.
Yep. Mm.
That's a good tip. We like we like being able to educate
people. Well, most of their feeders let you do minimum of six to, I think, 9 or 10 if you want to.
And you've got some new technology that's got a random, it's just going to randomly feed it sometime?
So on our Bluetooth timer, it's kind of a different school of thought, right? So, you know, we've talked about patterning deer, you know, one of the use of feeders being to bring them in at a certain time. We've come out with a random timer on our Bluetooth timer to where you can set it for – two feedings a day, and it'll randomize in the morning and in the afternoon. And there'll be a minimum hour, a couple hour difference between those times. And so this is kind of, you know, we've tested it and had pretty good success to where we're not patterning the deer. We're trying to make them come around more often to make, to, so they can, you know, investigate to see when the feed is going to be available to them.
One side benefit of that though, that this has always been from the biologist, one of the problems with feeding is they become predator traps. Mm-hmm. You change the time and you eliminate the predator trap.
Huh. I hadn't thought about that. Mm-hmm.
So there's multiple different avenues, and I'm kind of excited to get those in the hand of consumers to see what kind of success they have with that.
Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see the random versus the time, the data that comes out from that.
So, Derek, for a couple of years, I've had this feeder that will shock a raccoon.
Right.
And once a month, I'll be like, it's not working. And then I'll touch it a second time, and it'll shock the fire out of him.
Well,
what's going on with this? Tell me
procedure,
about that.
The procedure is there's a shocking circuit with a capacitor in the separate circuit board. So the predator or the raccoon or the bobby coal has to touch both leads once, and it charges the capacitor. If you touch them again, it unloads the capacitor.
Ah. And it unloads it, I'm telling you.
You were trying to bobby, get
it. It needs to.
It baits you in, though, because you'll be like, well, dadgummit, it's not working.
Bobby, it's kind of like that Christmas movie where the boy sticks his tongue to the flagpole. If you stick your tongue to it, you can really tell whether it's shocking or not. You'd be ready.
Lanny, remember that doe that
genius.
Kept
that
sticking her?
Genius.
Yeah, she needs that thing.
There's no telling how much money you cost your company, though.
They'll go viral,
though.
Because
I have thrown away more trashed, broken. I mean, I can even remember where it was something you had to snap it down that they unsnapped and took it off. Yep. It's crazy what a raccoon can do to it. And fish feeders are worse, honestly, are worse than, you know, deer feeders as far as attracting them because of that fishy smell to the fish feed. Mm-hmm. But it's crazy. We would put a feeder behind our camp where we could see it, and it would be gone in a week, 10 days. And they would
be up there spinning.
Yeah,
spinning
and I mean, bone. Yeah, and so – last year we put one up with the new whatever shock guard on it, and it went on for 3 months the same amount of feed. which, I mean, I didn't have a camera on it to see it. I didn't need one. It's crazy the difference it made. Hmm. And guess what? They don't tear it to shreds either.
So, Dan, you've, for all these years, I mean, you've since 1979, if I'm right.
That's correct.
So you've been dealing with raccoons and feeders.
Yes.
So you've probably been trapping them longer than the average guy because raccoons, you know, it's just the last few years it's really caught them.
Yeah.
So have you noticed that we've got more raccoons now than we used to? What's your thoughts there?
I think you're noticing it. And, you know, we touched on it on the radio show over in Birmingham. You're wherever you're feeding – you're bringing them, so you're noticing them more. The reason you think they're more now probably is you got cameras that's sending you pictures or you're going and getting pictures that show the raccoons at nocturnal activity. Before, you weren't getting that. You didn't know they were out there. You weren't out there at night watching it. I mean, some people may have been, but most people shouldn't have been. Yeah. But that. So now you know what's on it, so you know how to protect from it. You know, it's very rare you see coyotes in the background of cameras around feeding. They're smart. They know that.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what, though.
Now, you'll get them, but not like you do raccoons.
But it's seasonal. I don't know what's going on. I've never heard biologists tell me. But it's all of a sudden certain times of the year when you hadn't seen any coyotes, bobcats, anything, and then all of a sudden you start seeing them at cameras everywhere. And my point, I was going to say one of the best cases for feeding on your place with an automatic feeder and all is actually the predators that you can trap. So just to say, maybe you lease or own 200 acres or 1,000 acres, and your mission to kind of at least balance out the predators on my place to help the fawns recruitment, to help the turkeys hatch and stuff. So, you know, what's that? Coyotes, bobcats, foxes, maybe that's coons and possums for sure. Maybe a skunk. What a daunting task to buy so many traps. You don't even have enough time to every nook and cranny and nook and stream and every possible trail for them. And all. It's fun to trap. It's so much more effective to be sure before you pull your feeders for the year to go. And I got a tip from actually Hank Parker told me this. Don't just trap them all the time, but you've got a camera. You know what's going on. Descend on them with multiple traps and just hammer them. So much more effective, especially if you might have a big, bad old bobcat you hadn't been able to see. I've seen that before. We had a guy doing trapping on us, and I tipped him off that this bobcat hadn't seen one in months, was coming by this feeder checking. Mm-hmm. And I guess he could smell or something. Anyway, 2 days later, he sent me a picture. He caught the bobcat.
Mm-hmm. The one of the reasons in the early days, before everybody viewed it as, oh, let's kill the nest predators and let's help the turkeys, let's help the quail and all that, if there was a solar panel on a feeder, doesn't matter where it was in the United States, the first thing that raccoon's doing is pulling those wires out of that solar panel, and they were destroying product like crazy. So Derek had to come up with ways to hide the wires that they couldn't destroy that. Yeah. But now, again, there's the push to control the nest predators, and that's the biggest push out the sea.
Well, I mean, I'm not even trying to advocate to everybody they wipe predators out and unjustly favor one species, but it's just a fact. If you leave things unchecked, it will get out of balance. And so I'm a big fan of keeping that place in balance. Mm-hmm. So, and that's going to require some maintenance of predators.
Yeah.
Well, one of the other products we've got coming out this year, you know, if you have a situation, we have a lot of raccoons or other squirrels eating a lot of your feed, is, you know, putting PVC pipe on feeder legs is not a new concept. It's been done in the backwoods forever. However, we came up with a way to mount it to the feeder legs, right? So for $30, you get three adapters that fits 4-inch PVC, either Schedule 40 or Class 200. And it allows it to spin on the leg, but not only spin it shakes.
Hmm.
And so it doesn't imply shaking, but if they get onto it, it will also shake and spin. And so I had a feeder... I was probably getting 12 to 14 raccoons climbing those legs every night. You know, I didn't have a shocking circuit on it, so they're getting up and spinning the spin plate all night. And I have a video of when I put these PVC onto the feeder legs, this raccoon came onto the legs, it scared the stew out of them, and I haven't had a single raccoon spin this spin plate on this feeder since. And that was a year ago.
They can't climb it anymore.
Right. They can't grip it. It scares them when it shakes, and so it's completely eliminated that problem for me.
Derek, I gave you a baculum when you sat down here. Do you know what that was?
I did. Me and Dan were laughing about it when I didn't want to hold it the whole time we were talking.
Bobby, that's not for public. Yeah. Mark that time code, Richie. Yeah. Mark that time
More
code.
Dad jokes.
Yeah, y'all look up baculum. So, I tell you, the whole coon thing, though, it's just really I'm hearing more and more people in the last few years, and I just feel like we're making some headway. I hear more and more people talk about.
Well, they do carry. I mean, having too many is not healthy. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know there's a lot of people love raccoons, and that's great. And I mean, they're a great animal, but having too many, I mean, they also carry just
rabies. Yeah. Tremendously.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, we used to have a lot of people that hunted them back in the day, and these days, myself included,
what do y'all think? Do you think more people are after the raccoons or after the hogs, or vice versa?
Well, the hogs are about the same. I mean, yeah. There's no biological hazard like the hogs. Yeah.
But the raccoons are people get after. So both of them are hated by landowners.
Here's a fact.
You know, God put raccoons here. We put pigs here.
That's right. But the one thing everybody listening needs to know, those are two of the very smartest critters on four wheels.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Both of them. I mean, you throw coyotes in there, and that's probably in the top, three of the top five on the planet. I mean, they are so smart.
Yeah.
And so don't take it for granted just because a pig stands out there and didn't see you that he's dumb. They're so, oh my gosh, they're so hard to trap and maintain. And they blow up and pop. They're the worst. Don't even get off on that biological hazard we've ever encountered, at least in this part of the country.
We've got some in a trap right now that when we get finished with here, we've got to go deal with for the television show. Richie. We got a notification a little while ago. Mac, you had a question.
I do. So this is a more simple question, but using y'all's feeders, I'm just curious. So if you're feeding a triple clean corn and you pick the seconds that will spin, what is the ratio to second per pound of corn?
It all depends on the gap and the size of the opening and the gap of how much feed can escape. So on each one, it's different. What we used to say, and Derek may have something brought up, if you took a 5-gallon bucket and you set it off for 10 seconds and you weigh the bucket, weigh the corn that comes out, the rate. That's the old way to do it.
It also depends on the RPM of the motor. Our new timers have a low, medium, and high motor setting. And so we calculate it. We actually provide that in your instructions. I think it's 3.5 seconds to 4 seconds for a pound, something like that. And don't quote me on that right now. It's
Bobby, putting
off
out biologic
memory.
Feed, I know y'all got the same question. Putting out feed, how fast should I go and open the valve? How much am I putting out?
We do.
It's all variable, right?
It is, yeah.
So if you wanted to spin it further away, you would use the smallest possible gap between
not always.
But the highest setting.
The highest,
but just if you need enough feed, you would just run it longer.
Definitely highest setting for sure, RPM. But high to your feeder also makes a difference too.
Yeah, I'm saying if you're letting too much feed down, does it slow it down a bit and not kick it as far?
It can,
and it depends on the situation. On the adjustable funnel on here, the amount of difference is pretty small regarding the feed actually slowing down the spin plate more or less at high or low.
Mm-hmm. I've got a different question on a different gear. What are some common things you could just buy at your feed and seed store or whatever to add to a feeder? Just to say someone, right, wrong, or different, they like to feed year-round, not just a place to shoot deer over or something. And they want to incorporate into a smart kind of feed. What I do know, it is not smart to feed just corn year-round and nothing else. What would be some common things you'd recommend putting in there with the corn, especially that would be healthier for your deer herd or for turkeys or everything in general?
Good question,
Daniel.
That's a great question. We worked with Dr. Causey over to Auburn when the first soybean data got produced. And you can never go wrong with the soybeans because you're raising your protein levels. And now the roasted proteins soybeans are just hot, hot commodity. The hunting community has embraced those. They love getting them. They're well prepared. And so that is excellent to it. There's been other stuff tried to be put in it, powders, granules. I hadn't seen anything of that I would repeat on it. But the items that will raise the protein level and change it that are water resilient, again, avoid disease. Those would be your best items, in my opinion.
No, I agree. I was actually going to say the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, actually, that's the first thing. I've tried that, and one of the things I was trying to do is, you know, now it's legal in Mississippi and Alabama, almost all states, to run the feeder for deer season, and we certainly have them, and I've seen a noted difference, and we started to see we're attracting and holding more turkeys on places, too, because even if they weren't in the feeder every day, it's just the fact that it was there, but I started trying to be conscious, listening to the biologists, of how critical it is to raise that protein level mm-hmm. with those hens, gobblers too, but right. especially, mm-hmm. he said, you know, your gobblers may be more active and gobble more, they feel better, but especially those hens going into that nesting season, you got so much better chance. And in fact, way back when I was a kid, there was a biologist, Dr. Dan Speak from mm-hmm. Auburn,
yes.
who was a pioneer too, like Dr. Hirsch at State. And he was telling people, everybody loved to feed their turkeys right before turkey season. He said, guys, just put some soybeans in there with it. Mm-hmm. Just a little protein makes a huge difference in that nest success. So mm-hmm. my point is the roasted soybeans, such a good product because it actually is even a little more nutritious and it's safer because it's been just like eating raw meat versus cooked meat. And so he brought that up. I didn't solicit it, but mm-hmm. I would agree with him 100%. I started 3 years ago with the last, before we pull them, we run the last cycle with some roasted soybeans in there for those hens. Now, if you're going to run them all year and stuff somewhere, it's not that much to get a few bags of that and include it. It was such a good counterbalance to just corn, because too much of that is going to be too much of that.
Do y'all ever put like a grain sorghum in there, mix it in, smaller seed?
I was looking more at it, you know, the grain sorghum, I think, is pretty typical of corn on protein levels. So if you're the purpose of raising protein levels is good, and it's no different than green fields, Bobby. We chased it, and y'all saw us chase it. Bobby visited one time when Roundup Ready alfalfa came out. Monsanto, we got selected as one of the test sites for the state of Alabama, and I thought we had hit the golden bullet. Those first couple of years were unbelievable. Bugs come in after that. If you're alfalfa grower, you know about, but you're going to be well versed in pest, and so it is. You can't be a weekend farmer and have great success with alfalfa and doing that. It's a great golden bullet in it, but no different than adding clover to if a guy's just planting wheat and thinks he's getting it done. Mm-mm. A clover, not only do you get a legume that's putting nitrogen back into soil, but you raise the protein level, probably tripled your protein mm-hmm. level of your wheat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know about that than anybody, Bobby. What do you think?
Clover.
Don't get me started on clover.
Clovers. Yeah. We're big fans of clover.
Oh, my goodness. It's my number one thing.
Yeah. Non-typical is our favorite, but I mean, there's a lot of good clovers out there.
Oh, there
sure,
are. Absolutely.
So, gosh, we've been going for a while here, guys. Why don't let's think about if there's any other questions that we've got for them. And while we do that, why don't we turn it over to Mike and Rich, and we can ask them a trivia question.
Oh, fun.
All right.
This is a layup.
Here we go again.
The two of y'all can talk together.
Who wrote the question?
Bobby's selling right now.
His layups always tend to – first of all, he would try to embarrass me. That would be his top goal. But his layups are always embarrassing to people because he set them up, and when they miss it, they feel bad.
Well, so we're doing this a little bit differently. So we've randomly chosen someone who left a review for us. They're going to win a prize guaranteed. You two mm-hmm. knuckleheads over on the couch are playing. If y'all get the question right, you and your squad that came with you all win a T-shirt. One of the Gamekeeper podcast T-shirts.
I don't get Laney's, do I? Do I get a fresh one?
Yeah, no, you don't want this.
You get a tank top. We got a tank top.
Toxie has to be involved in our group, so we need to phone a friend. We need Toxie in here on this.
If you don't get this one, we're in a lot of trouble.
he has set y'all up. This is really bad.
This last week? Yeah.
Your best phone a friend is going to be Dudley Phelps. Yeah,
be scared.
All right, here we go.
Today's trivia is brought to you by Sheffield Financial. Explore swift, effortless, and convenient financing for power sports, outdoor power equipment, and trailers, fueling your pursuits in hunting, fishing, and gamekeeping. More details at sheffieldfinancial.com.
I tell you what, nothing like that swift financing.
Yeah.
That's good stuff.
They might finance some of these feeders
that's
that
right.
you guys have. Yeah. Sheffield Financing, we're so proud of it.
Well, they have you finance the four-wheeler at a minimum, so you can buy the feeders.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Put a cedar on the back of the man. Four.
There you go.
I'm on the first team All-American squad for cedars.
Yes, yeah. Yes you are.
if you can get one past my, if I can't tear it up, then you made a good
solid
one.
Solid price.
Yeah, solid. Right. All right, Mac.
All right, so y'all are playing for Red Dirt Roosting.
Oh.
And so you were so Red Dirt Roosting, you actually just won the last Gamekeeper Edition turkey vest.
Number 5 of 5.
Nice. Yep. Yep. And so if you are not Red Dirt Roosting, you can still use the discount, which is GKPOD25 for 25% off. On GamekeeperFillWear.com.
That's a big discount.
Yeah. Yeah. I just got mine filled up with all my gear.
It's a nice vest.
Yeah.
It sure is. So, all right. Pressure's on.
Here we go.
So, anytime you think you might know it, you can just say it. I think you should be able to get this one. All right. So, in the early 1900s, when many wildlife species were disappearing or declining, the firearms and ammunition industry asked Congress to impose an excise tax on the sale of firearms ammunition to help fund wildlife conservation in the United States. The blank passed in 1937, which is known as the Federal Aid in Wildlife Restoration.
Uh-huh. Here we go.
So what's the question?
The blank with the question.
What's the name?
Fill in the blank.
In the fishing side, and I'm going to let Derek answer it too because I bet he knows it. Everybody knows it. It's Dingle Johnson.
Well, we're talking hunt sides now. Let's.
Well, I know that.
Well, that's good to know. I didn't
Did
know
you,
that.
You didn't know that? I the didn't. Fishing has exactly the same thing called the Dingle Johnson side.
Okay.
Dingle Johnson.
And on the hunting side, it's the Pittman Robinson Act. Yeah.
There you go.
There it is. Yeah.
So, yes, and I knew you know. And I wanted to ask that question. Mm-hmm. So, though you guys win T-shirts. But I wanted – so you have been so – close to the politics mm-hmm. of conservation in the last 10 years.
I hate those two words being used together.
I wish you could just take just a second and just talk about how important those funds are to a state.
Those funds are critical because a lot of funds are non-funded, that the state game and fish agencies are non-funded by state funds. And a lot of times that's the only funds that they will receive is from Pittman Robinson funds. And a lot of people don't know those are awarded by, you have to have a way to track that. That comes from license sales. So if a state chooses or has a chance to get more Pittman Robinson money, it's based upon your license sales. That's the reason you see a lot of states offer a sportsman's license. Whether the people hunt or don't hunt, it adds to the fund so they attain more Pittman Robinson money to work with Game and Fish. That is a critical part of Game and Fish. Without Pittman Robinson funds, it would be it's extremely hard to raise money in Game and Fish. That would be a great way. I mean, that's the way to do it.
Is it kind of like matching funds almost?
It kind of. You get a pro rata basis based upon license sales.
Yeah. You know what? That was some forward thinking back in the day.
Oh, no doubt.
It still goes back to what we said all along, the first – Hunt the Country show ever aired in the 1990s, our host said, and it's so true, he said, so if you're an animal lover and you love animals, this is the honest truth, the best place you could spend money to do more good for animals, wild animals,
you
go to your best favorite mm-hmm. state and buy a hunting license, mm-hmm. even if you don't hunt.
Yeah.
And I know for people that are just want to protest hunting, they think that's crazy, but that is actually, they have to eat their words. That is true. Mm-hmm. More money goes back to do more good for wild animals from mm-hmm. a hunting license than any source of income in the world.
Mm-hmm. While you're at it, go buy some waterfowl stamps as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. absolutely.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And the turkey stamps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, buy them all.
You got another question, Lanny?
I do not.
Dudley?
I think I'm good. We've covered a lot.
We really have.
That was a good one.
That was a great one.
There's one product we haven't talked about yet, and that's the Lumen. You know, we have the options for cellular. We have the options for Bluetooth. And now we have another solution to keep you out of the woods to alleviate pressure is the lumen, and it's bringing back an older design that we used to sell, and it uses a photocell sensor on it to sense light levels. And so it'll feed once in the day or once in the morning, about 30 minutes after sunrise, so about an hour after first light. And then it'll feed again in the evening, about 30 minutes before sunset, so an hour before last light. And that'll adjust throughout the year. You don't have to worry about daylight savings time. You just have to make sure it has, you know, feed in the hopper and battery. And we already talked about the perpetual power solutions. So it's just, and that there's no other cost to it, just on its own. So it's just another option for the consumer to leave it and forget it and not have to go into the woods.
Tools in the toolbox. Yeah,
that makes it
but,
easy.
But the real point of this, and Derek and I talked about this in detail, if you set a feeder or a timer on your fish feeder, on any feeder, and you set it by current daylight, you in a month or two, you're not feeding at the target time you were trying to feed. The great benefit of a photocell feeder is it automatically adjusts and you stay at the same time. When you go hunting all year or you go to observe wildlife, you're going to go a little bit after daylight, usually sit in the stand a couple hours and not. If you hadn't adjusted that timer, you're going to miss the activity because it's not going to happen then. The photocell feeder immediately adjusts to that. So, and a lot of people mistake. They're, every day they're getting out of the time they want to feed with a timer. Mm-hmm. This is simplistic. It works. It feeds while you're hunting or when you want to be hunting.
I think the time, the daylight sunrise, sunset time changes like 45 or 50 seconds yeah. every day. Mm-hmm. So I've always, one of the cool things that made me remember that is like, so from the beginning of turkey season to the end, so daylight savings used to be during the season. So it was like almost always, like in Alabama, I'll use that. It was almost always 5:15 was that, you know, first goblin light at the beginning of the season. And then it would get earlier and earlier. And then during the season, it would time would change. You'd move forward an hour, leap forward in the spring. So my point is, at the very end of the season, it would be almost identically the same time again. So in 6 weeks, it moves. Whatever you want to divide 6 weeks by an hour by, that's about how much time. So it's going to change every day almost a minute.
We were talking yesterday between the three of us. Now, I heard him gobbling at 5:52, and y'all heard him gobbling. We were trying to figure the distance.
He was asking me what was our first goblin light over here right now versus – he's east of us a couple hundred miles.
That's interesting to keep up with.
Time. That is interesting.
Yeah.
How about that? That's some old technology. That's been around a while.
You know, that was our very first technology.
The first feeders he ever sold had photocell driven. And what a great thing to bring back because, you know, it got outdated by the timer, but the technology on your original ones was so limited. It's the best you had then. But now photocell could really set up, and it's pretty smart, and I'll bet you more cost conscious for some guy trying to afford a feeder.
Exactly.
Yeah. So what a great way, a better feeder at a more convenient price.
Yeah. Yep. So guys, I will say, feeding is not for everybody and we want guys to do it the right way.
Yep.
So our friends at Mississippi State that we respect them so much have a little thing that we kind of adopted and they talk about some guidelines about not putting out more than the animals can eat in about a 24 hour period. They can eat a lot of corn in a 24 hour. It's not deterring you, but it's just saying don't pour it out on the ground. That's not a healthy way to do
it. Well, it's illegal in Mississippi, too.
Bobby, I've got a great question. And I've asked this around the biological community, and I get beat around the corner answers. Everybody kind of knows how much a deer will eat at a feeding. Everybody knows the other animals. How much are those raccoons eating? Let's say you got eight raccoons feeding at your feeder. How much, where deer may take in 2 pounds per feeding, how many pounds are those raccoons taking? I'd love to know that because that, and I don't know the answer to it. This isn't a trick question. I'd love to know how much that raccoon ingests. Because if that raccoon, think about this, if he's eating more than the deer are at your feeder, that's another good reason to
trap
those raccoons and get them.
Trap.
I don't know what it is, but like Derek just said, he had, what did you say, 12, 16
like 12 raccoons? Or 14 at one time.
It's got to be a lot.
It's got to be a pile of feed. And not only is it in the hunting community, it's in the agricultural community. So that would be kind of neat to know how much they're taking and destroying. Y'all have the access to somebody to get that information, I bet.
I was going to look at Derek. He looks like somebody that could solve it.
Well, all you got to do is place by place is different. Pay attention to your photos, and it'll tell you. It's a lot. And maybe it can't tell you the exact consumption, but
it's a bunch.
The coons are digging every little piece up everywhere. Yeah. And
that may be in the literature somewhere with, you know, agricultural damage or something.
I'd love to know that.
Also, one more thing they could spread. I don't know if deer can pick up distemper from them or something else, but that's one more thing at the feeder you just don't want there. Mm-hmm. No. Them or hogs, either one. Mm-hmm. So,
well, this has been interesting.
So I got to say, it's important to note in this is don't put there. The feeder is revolutionized. Thanks for hunting in so many ways. And all these management products. But if you expect it to be the magic bullet, you're making a big mistake. And Dan will be the first to tell you, there's no replacing doing what's best for your place. And we're talking about deer and supplemental feeding deer, like, you know, protein or a developed ration by a professional deer nutrition company. It'd be great for your deer. But still, you mean there's no replacing. The only way that really does justice is you got your place within and you've raised the carrying capacity and managed the herd to where it's at a healthy level. Then the feeders and the supplement feed can actually take you to another level. But don't expect it to be the magic bullet. And it's just so easy to manage your place. Sometimes you make money. Take some money off the place by harvesting timber. Maybe that's simple. But create that diversity and create that habitat and carrying capacity. And then all these products can really make a difference for you.
The guy that's not doing much for his wildlife is the guy that only during hunting season is going and pouring a sack of corn on the ground and then leaving.
Yep.
If anything, he's a desperate.
Yeah.
It's like that old Purina ad. There's a lot more to it than just dumping that on the ground. Mm-hmm. You got to have the whole program. Yeah, and that incorporates from food plots to feeders, if you choose, to habitat, to native habitat, just like Toxie said, to burning, to all the things that incorporate good wildlife conditions.
Yeah, I mean, if you're not doing all of that and you don't have quality cover nearby, they may be a mile away staying in that good habitat before they can – you know, come to your place to eat your feed.
At your neighbor's place. Yeah. And your neighbor probably will kill them if you don't.
Yeah.
You know, they'll end up at your feeder way after dark, and then your neighbor will kill them if he's got the cover.
Yeah, good point.
All right, guys, this has been fun. Derek, you got
we got a joint giveaway. By the time this airs, we'll have active with Gamekeepers in Moultrie. It'd be one of our Pro Hunter 2 feeder kits that's actually hydrographed in Mossy Oak Bottomland.
All right. Oh, good. Better in Bottomland.
So it's one of a kind. So if they're interested, they'll have to go to the Moultrie or Mossy Oak Gamekeeper Facebook and Instagram to enter on social media. And good luck. Hope one of y'all gets it and appreciates it.
I bet we can't win.
Yeah, no. we never get to win anything.
No. I'll get my buddy that doesn't hunt to put in for it. Yeah.
Derek, I like your shirt.
Yeah,
you
got some companions on now.
I got some companions on.
That's a good green. I don't know what that green's.
It's called leaf. Just take you back in time. Yep, leaf.
Leaf.
Dirt, bark, branch, and leaf.
That's my favorite
original
green.
Colors for them. Companions.
Yeah. I've still got those old companion shirts, and they still wear good. They're full of holes and whatnot, but they're 30-year-old stuff that's been out there. They're the most comfortable. What was the byline you had? Your best friend?
Instant old friend.
That's what it was.
That was great.
Yeah. We love them.
Yeah.
All right, guys, this has been a lot of fun. If I'm looking around, we're all ready to go eat.
Hungry.
Yeah, that's the word.
Y'all been talking about feeders for an hour, and we hadn't had anything to eat all day.
I need to get my feet sack on.
Yeah. Hey, guys, the spring issue is in the mail.
Looks great, Bobby, by the way.
It does look really good. Todd did a fantastic job. It's got the Mossy Oak turkey stamp on the front of it. Dan, we're raising money for turkeys. You buy a turkey stamp. Nice. You need to buy some.
Yes, sir.
And you can give them out to your friends.
Yes, sir.
And, gosh. Why don't you say goodbye, Dudley?
Goodbye, Dudley.
Get us out of here, Richie.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Gamekeeper Podcast. And be sure to tune in again. Subscribe to Gamekeeper Farming for Wildlife Magazine. And don't miss the Mossy Oak Properties Fistful of Dirt Podcast with my good buddy, Ronnie Cuz Strickland.